Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 186. I'm recording it on Tuesday, November 17th, 2009. The Peak 10 level today is 19. That's not too exciting for stock investors. The music for the podcast is by our friend Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. This one isn't by Kevin. This is the earlier group I got. But the title of the selection is Ignorance is Bliss. The title of the podcast is The Biggest Mistake Ever Made in the History of Personal Finance. Wow. And I am going to live up to that title. I'm going to tell you the biggest mistake ever made in the history of personal finance. I'm going to start by reading a little bit from my blog entry today. The title of my blog entry today is Buy and Hold Investing Doesn't Work. These links prove it. That one should be on the front page. You know, do you ever feel like the newspapers aren't able to fit the most important news into the newspaper? That one seems to me, if there's proof that buy and hold investing doesn't work, it seems to me it should maybe be on the cover of the Wall Street Journal, something like that, given that there are millions of middle class investors who believe buy and hold investing does work. That's the title of the article, and it's not Rob Bennett saying it. I have quotes from 20, you know, authorities in the field, either the individuals being quoted are authorities or else the publications writing about it are authoritative publications. So this isn't some crazy guy on the internet, you know, some guy never went to investing school saying this. These are serious people. I'm just going to read some of them to you. Because there's a reason why I want to tell you the greatest mistake in the history of personal finance. It's because it's caused this economic crisis. It's put our political system in jeopardy. And it did all these things by leading a lot of smart and good and hardworking people to believe that buy and hold investing can work. And it cannot, according to the historical data. All right, I'm just going to read some of these. Link number one is Rob Arnott. Rob Arnott was the editor I think it's the most prestigious journal in the field, Financial Analyst Journal. Here's Rob Arnott. What does Rob Arnott say about buy and hold investing? Here's Rob Arnott. The conventional, the first part's not a quote, or maybe it is, I'm not sure. This is all a quote. The conventional wisdom of modern investing is largely myth and urban legend. Wow. Do you need to know anything else? Say that Rob Arnott is wrong. He could be wrong. Rob Arnott can be wrong, just like Rob Bennett can be wrong. But the fact that someone as knowledgeable and as respected as Rob Arnott would say this means, at the bare minimum, we should be discussing this. At the bare minimum. If he's actually right, we need to tell people, you know, we need to junk the last 30 years of investing advice, put it in a trash can. But if he's wrong, we need to find out why he's wrong. Okay? Stocks here. This one's from the Wall Street Journal. Some few months back, you know, it's an article. Stocks do not follow a random walk. This finding is confirmed by 30 years of research. Well, it'd be nice if we told middle class investors that, wouldn't it? Stocks do not follow a random walk. Did anybody listening to these words ever read a book called A Random Walk Down Wall Street? Turns out it was wrong. I would think that would be... I'm glad that it was written up in the Wall Street Journal. I give them full credit. But it seems to me, once we discovered that the stocks do not follow a random walk, we should start telling people about it. It's good that we told them in this article. But in other words, we sort of need to get on the ball. We need to do more. It's not enough to write an article and then business just goes on as usual. We need to spread the word. Here's another one. This is from a blog that I like, the Political Calculations blog. If empirical observation is incompatible with the model must be trashed or amended. even if it is conceptually beautiful or mathematically convenient? Well, empirical observation is incompatible with the buy and hold model. So it needs to be trashed or amended. This guy's right on point. Link number four, economics is a dog's breakfast of theoretical ideas and alleged causal relationships that are at all times unproven and in dispute. Link number five is to a statement that since they did not diagnose the disease, there is little popular confidence that they know the cure. What if economics is actually at the same level as medicine was when doctors still believed in the application of leeches? Does that sound familiar? I have a podcast. The state of understanding of stock investing today is primitive. We are at the level that the medical profession was at when they believed in the application of leeches. That's just true. That's just the way it is. It's not really a criticism so much of the people that, you know, the doctors who believed in leeches weren't bad people any more than the people who believe in buy and hold investing are bad people. They're not dumb people, but they're wrong. Or at least there's a mountain of evidence showing they're wrong. And at the very least, they should be looking into it. They should be trying to find out if they can come up, you know, with some explanation. Fine, but it doesn't look like it. This is Jeremy Grantham. Never underestimate the power of a dominant academic idea to choke off competing ideas, and never underestimate the unwillingness of academics to change their views in the face of evidence. Warren Buffett, you heard of him? There is so much, this is Warren Buffett speaking, not Rob Bennett. There is so much that's false and nutty in modern investing practice. I wonder if we should consider having a national debate. Oh my goodness. Let me see, I'll just read a couple more. I don't want to read them all. Following conventional wisdom has led a generation of investors down the road to ruin. Okay, seems to me maybe we should allow honest posting on the internet. Might help. Andrew Smithers, it is sad that the idea that price doesn't matter should ever have become seriously considered. Wharton, a study at the Wharton School. The cause of the crisis was models that we used to understand stock investing that, quote, by design, disregard the key elements driving outcomes in real-world markets. Models that by design disregard key elements, that, you know, I could see how that might cause a little problem, might cause a little, you know, a little bit of bump in the road there. Here's one. Perhaps most scandalously, the theory remained received wisdom long after empirical and theoretical arguments had demolished it. This isn't something new. I'm not telling you some new newsflash. We have known for close to 30 years that buy and hold investing didn't work. We knew it. I put the word in quotes. We knew it intellectually. We just haven't been able to talk about it or share what we know or learn what works. Here's Paul Krugman of the New York Times. There was something else going on, a general belief that bubbles just don't happen. What's striking when you reread Greenspan's assurances is that they weren't based on evidence. They were based on the a priori assertion that there simply can't be a bubble. That's our problem. Here's one. Link number 17. The British Chartered Financial Analyst Institute recently asked its members for the first time if they trusted in market efficiency. That's the buy and hold model. And discovered that more than two-thirds of respondents no longer believed that market prices reflected all available information. Well, if they don't, then buy and hold can't work. More startling still, 77% of the CFA group also strongly or very strongly disagreed that investors in the aggregate behaved rationally. In apparent defiance of the wisdom of crowds idea that has driven much investment theory. Link 18. Shiller declared in 1984 that the logical leap from observing that markets were unpredictable to concluding that prices were right was, quote, one of the most remarkable errors in the history of economics. Peter Bernstein, big author in this field, quote, everything has fallen apart. That says it. So, we have a disaster on our hands. We have a disaster on our hands. We have been giving people advice 90% of the investment advice field has been giving this advice for 30 years that buy and hold is the way to go. And yet, there's now a mountain of evidence that buy and hold not only sometimes doesn't work, can never work. It's logically impossible for it to ever work. I've done the analysis. It's not even possible for a rational human mind to imagine a scenario in which it could work. Buy and hold is not a flawed strategy. It is the worst strategy that the human mind could conceive of, says Rob Bennett. But it's not only Rob Bennett pointing out these problems. It's all these other people, Paul Krugman and Warren Buffett and Rob Arnott and Andrew Smithers and the, you know, on and on and on and on and on. So the purpose of the purpose of all the podcast is to figure out what do we have to do to get out of this mess. But what I'm going to try to do here is focus on one aspect of it, the mistake, and explain the mistake with the hope that if people understand the mistake, they will understand what happened, and they will be more open to the idea of taking the steps necessary to fix the mistake. Because deep in our hearts, our discussions for the past 7 years have been friction-filled, to say the least. But deep in our hearts, is there one person alive who doesn't want to know how to invest effectively? There's nobody. There's nobody. Learning how to invest effectively is a win-win-win-win-win. So it's incredible that we're in this situation. Now, another thing I wanted to quote sort of as preface is, this is just a little funny thing that I put up as the passion of the day, but there's a thread at the Bogleheads board. They're reporting that Bogleheads now has more posts than the Vanguard Diehards Forum at Morningstar. Vanguard Diehards was a incredible investing forum, hugely popular. A lot of intelligent people posted there, and I was one. Well, I don't know if I was highly intelligent, but I posted there. And but the things I said, the quote unquote leaders of the board could not tolerate. Although everything I said was, of course, permitted. I never posted abusively in any way, shape, or form. So everything I said was permitted under the rules, but they couldn't allow it. Because I was pointing out that buy and hold doesn't work. I was pointing out that all this evidence I just read to you, that it's a disaster. And so ultimately, what happened is the leaders of that board moved the community to this new location, where because Morningstar was allowing honest posting and they couldn't tolerate it, and so the whole Bogleheads.org board was founded to escape Rob Bennett. That's an historical fact, and it is today the largest investing board on the internet. It was founded to escape Rob Bennett, incredibly enough. Some guy who posts on the internet. That's all I am. No investing school. No managing a big fund. And here's a little limerick posted by a guy named Grok87. There once was a poster named Hocus, whose post caused the board to lose focus. A general revolt caused most folks to bolt, and now we have found a new locus. So he's celebrating that this board was able to escape, the reach of honest posting, as if this were some wonderful, wonderful accomplishment. And my friend Drip Guy puts a comment of a similar nature. He says, this is proof that just as in a clam, a tiny irritant can start the forming of a beautiful pearl. So he's saying that, and I was an irritant, I was a tiny irritant, by, pointing out accurate safe withdrawal rate numbers, and it caused this wonderful pearl, because the board community had to escape the reach of this person who was posting honestly on safe withdrawal rates, and by escaping, they developed the ability to ban anyone who posts honestly, and thereby to create this wonderful pearl. What kind of pearl is it? It's a pearl where they can all stand around and say, oh yeah, buy and hold works, the buy and hold's good, oh, buy and hold science, it's perfect, and no mistakes. And they can tell each other these fairy tales. Safe from honest posting. That's the idea of the pearl. And I, of course, don't agree this is a pearl. I believe in the American way, I think it's fair to say, The American way is free speech. I believe that people with different viewpoints should be permitted to post their honest views. And then, of course, the readers can decide for themselves whether they want to go with what Warren Buffett says, and what Rob Arnott says, and what Andrew Smithers says, and what Peter Bernstein says, and what Bill Bernstein says, and what all these others say, or if they want to go with buy and hold. Now, having said that, I have to present the case fairly. All these people have said all the things I'm saying they said. This is not, this is verifiable. But there's something that Rob Bennett does that Warren Buffett doesn't do. And I don't know if Andrew Smithers might do it, but some of these others don't do it. Certainly Bill Bernstein doesn't do it. And it's the cause of all the friction, and it's becoming more and more clear. You know, I think I reported in the last podcast, this fellow Carl Richards has banned me from Behavior Gap blog. He told me he hadn't banned me, but I tried to post there today, and I was banned. So I sent him an email and said, can you please tell me, is there a ban or is there not? He's told me there's not a ban, but it sure seems like there's a ban. So I think it is. And Carl has told me in our email discussions, he says, Rob, you know, I've read everything I can about valuation-informed indexing. Your site is just, it's of huge value. That's wonderful. So he thinks I'm wonderful. He thinks my work has great value. But he's banned me from from commenting at his blog. But that seems odd, no? Seems odd to me. But Carl's position is, and of course, once I told Carl, I said, you know, we were having these discussions, and he told me these things. He says, Rob, you know, I agree with you. You know, we don't have any problem. I said, well, Carl, okay. I said, thank you for those kind words. I said, you know, I'm gonna, you know, write an article telling people at my site, telling people what you think, because I respect your, you know, opinion. And, you know, there have been all these smear campaigns. I think it's good for people to learn that smart, good people like you love the site and are learning from it. Oh, no, Rob. No. No, that was off the record. I didn't mean that. No. Don't quote. I said, well, Rob, you didn't say anything about off the record. What's going on here? It's not off the record. Why would you not want people to know? Forget about on the record, off the record. Why would you not want people to know that you love my site? What? Carl doesn't want people to know because Rob Bennett is doing something Carl's not doing. Carl knows there's problems. Just like Mike Piper knows there's problems at Oblivious Investor, just like Warren Buffett knows there's problems, just like John Bogle knows there's problems, you know, just like Mel Lindauer knows there's problems, just like John Graney knows there's problems, just like Peter Bernstein knows there's problems, just like Bill Bernstein, just like everybody. Everybody who's spent any time looking at this knows this model doesn't work. It's not in accord with the data. It's supposed to be a database model, and the data doesn't support it. Going back to 1870, it never has supported it. That's a problem. I have to explain these things. This is where the state of the world today is that I have to explain these things. We all know it's wrong. We all know it's wrong. I've had this, you know, I've had this sort of situation come up over and over again. There was a time when, John Bogle recently, he wrote, it's at my website. I did a podcast on it. He had an interview with Index Universe, and he said valuation-informed indexing can work. He said he wouldn't do it, but he said it can work. Well, if John Bogle thinks it can work, why can't we talk about it at a board called Bogleheads? Bill Bernstein, I remember, we were having all these discussions about efficient market theory. And I was saying, it's been discredited, and lots of people were agreeing. And Bill Bernstein, who's a hero at Vanguard Diehards, came on and said, I don't believe in the macro version of efficient market theory. And that's what we were talking about, the macro version. I said, Bill, glad to hear that you agree with me. Could you please take a look at this calculator, the stock return predictor, and tell me what you think? And all of a sudden, there's silence. No more posts in that thread, boys and girls. Yeah, this happens to me over and over and over again. I had this with Bill Schulthess. I had a good discussion on the Get Rich Quickly blog, and or Get Rich, No, it's called Get Rich Slowly blog. Maybe it should be called the Get Rich Quickly blog, since they endorse passive investing over there, but it's called the Get Rich Slowly blog. And Bill comes to my site. He says, "Holy Toledo, this is amazing, you know, all the stuff you got." And then he reads an article at my site, you know, where we talk about Mel Lindauer and the Campaign of Terror, and all of a sudden Bill Schultheis isn't returning my emails. So all these people, they know that the model doesn't work, you know, because they follow the literature. And they think my stuff is just great. It's wonderful. But they don't want to be associated with it. They go, "Oh, no, off the record, don't tell anybody. Don't let anybody know. Don't let anybody know I read your site. Your work is of huge importance, but I don't want anybody to know I think that." Now, you know, this is weird, people. This is weird. And, you know, it includes friends of mine. John Walter Russell is my biggest supporter in the world. I mean, he died a few weeks ago, but John was one of my biggest supporters. And I think John felt this way to some extent. He would take the approach, what you could call a positive approach. He would take the approach of saying what works and not saying what doesn't work. See, this is the thing that's different about Rob Bennett. One of the points the goons make, they'll say, "Oh, we have discussions about, we have discussions about valuations," and there's a poster over at Bogleheads who is just top notch. His name is CJ King, and he understands valuation informed indexing as well as Rob Bennett does. He's just top notch. And they allow him to post. It's a fact. No smear campaigns, no death threats, none of this. So, you know, you sort of have to ask yourself the question at some point, what is it I'm doing that CJ King's not doing? You know, why do they love, well, they don't love him maybe, but they tolerate him. Why do they tolerate that guy and they hate Rob Bennett with a burning passion enough that they would, you know, move off of Morningstar to escape him? What the heck's going on here? Well, part of it is that we've had the crash and so they've opened up a little bit. But they're only opening up to the extent they feel they can't get away with it, with not doing it. In other words, the crash hurt so many people that the people who promote buy and hold felt we've got to open up a little bit. You know, there can't be a total ban anymore. That just doesn't fly in the face of people losing all their money. But we're not going to admit we were wrong. We'll allow CJ King to post, but we're not going to allow other people who agree with them. You know, we're not going to allow Microlepsis or John D. Craig, or, you know, or John Walter Russell while he was still alive, or Rob Bennett, or retired at 48. Or, you know, we're going to keep this limited. Why? Because we don't want it to gather any steam. We don't want it to gather any momentum. So there'll be a couple posts here and there that are a little disturbing, but, you know, 90% of the posts will be buy and hold, and for a few more years, we'll keep this going. Well, Rob Bennett thinks that's a bad idea. What I want is the day we figured out that the old school retirement studies get all the numbers wrong, which was day six. That's when John did his first study, a sensitivity study, showing that those numbers are from Bonkersville. This was what, May 13, 14, 15, 16, May 18th, 2002. According to numbers guy Rob here, that's when I said, let's call the press, let's call the paper, let's call the Wall Street Journal, let's get this published. People are planning their retirements on these things. Let's get the word out. Now, all right, I talk a lot about the political dynamics of why I have that feeling, because I'm not tied to the stock selling industry, but other people have this feeling that we can't do what Rob's doing. It's just too radical, too controversial, too bold. You know, we'd have to fix all these books. We'd have to, you know, I had a guy tell me that at Vanguard Diaries. He says, "Rob, you know, if you were just saying valuations are high and maybe people ought to be a little cautious, that would be fine. But you're not saying that. You're saying the whole model is wrong, Rob." And that is what I'm saying. The guy's right. The guy's just saying, "Rob, what we're getting is they're saying it's too much to swallow. You know, we can't, it's just too much. We can't, what are we going to do? Take all the textbooks for 30 years and throw them in a trash can? All the calculators?" And Rob Bennett's answer is yes. Short, I mean, there's a longer answer, but the short answer is yes. The longer answer is we don't quite have to throw them in the trash can. There's a lot of good stuff in these books and in these calculators. But yes, they all need to be changed. They all need to be changed. Yeah. All the asset allocation advice we've been hearing for 30 years is wrong. All the information about risk is wrong. All the information, about the, stocks for the long run is wrong. All this sort of thing. There's all kinds of things wrong. And I explore it all at the site. So it's a big, it's a big deal. Well, one, as I say, there's this political problem that says, it's just too big. That I think is the real motivation. That there's embarrassment, there's shame, there's pride, injured pride. There's just financial considerations. There's the threat of lawsuits. If we admit we got it wrong, are people going to sue us? We've been telling people bad advice. All these things. These are the real motivators. This is the reason why you can't do what Ron Bennett does. You can't say let's fix it. You got to pretend that, it's just a little problem. A little bit. Maybe people should be a little more careful, but maybe we shouldn't push stocks quite so much. But, we don't have to make any big changes. Well, I think that's wrong. I firmly believe that's wrong. I think when a mistake is this big, the title of the podcast is The Biggest Mistake Ever Made in the History of Personal Finance. Notice I don't say the stupidest mistake. I don't say the stupidest people who ever lived in the history. I don't believe that. They're not stupid people. But they just made a mistake. But what they did was they made a mistake at such a fundamental level that everything that followed is wrong. So they're using their intellect. It's sort of like you're driving a car and the car goes really fast. Let's take fast as the analogy to being intelligent. So the car drives, really fast, 90 miles an hour. So you're going to get to your destination really quickly. But there's one problem. You started out driving in the wrong direction. So what's happening is the faster the car goes, the farther away you are from where you want to be. The intelligence of these people is real, but it's not helping us. It's hurting us. So what we have to do as a society is get back to the mistake and fix it. And then all the intelligence of all these people becomes a plus instead of a negative. We've got to fix that mistake. So this is why Rob Bennett plays it the way he plays it. This is why I say, Carl, if you're going to ban me for posting honestly at the Behavior Gap blog, you go ahead and ban me, friend. I admire your work. Still do. I think you're wrong to ban me. I can't help your blog if I can't post honestly. And if we're dealing with an economic crisis and I don't tell people, what good am I? So we have to, the political problem is just there. I mean, there's just no way around it. I can't wave a magic wand and, make all those books go away or make all those calculators go away or anything like that. Not a thing I can do. But the one thing I feel maybe I can contribute is to a positive outcome is to say, okay, I do think there are some people who don't fully grasp how we got things so messed up. They say, it's just too much. And they say, what is this, a conspiracy? Or all these people, out to, screw the middle class? What's going on? And I don't think that's right. I think they made a mistake. Now, today, you could argue. I mean, today they're sort of trying to cover it up. And that's bad. I think that's foolish. They've already made a mistake that's caused great financial pain. And the cover-up is just going to enrage people, I fear. I mean, I worry. On the one hand, I want this to get out because we have to fix the mistake. On the other hand, I have to say that the longer this goes on, the more worried I get at what the reaction's going to be, because people are not going to be pleased. After the next stock crash, people are not going to be pleased. And it's just, it's so irresponsible to let this go on and on. I think it's crazy. I really think it's crazy. If I weren't involved in it, I wouldn't believe it. But yeah, I've reached a point where nothing shocks me anymore. It's crazy times crazy times crazy. So what we are getting today, the one good thing about the crash is that we've been getting more frank assessments, like the ones I just quoted. But there's a book, Justin Fox is the author, and it's called The Myth of Rational Markets. And I haven't read the book, but I've read several reviews of it. I want to read it. I encourage you to read it. It tracks the history of this buy and hold concept, the efficient market, rational market, whatever you call it. And this is the conventional investing advice of today. It's been dominant for, say, 30 years. And Justin, you know, explains why it's all baloney. It's been discredited for many years. But he misses that point. You know, he's basically saying all the things. I think one of the links there was from a review of that book. He's saying all the things at that link, but he's not saying what Rob Bennett's saying. What he concludes is, yeah, it's all wrong. There is no efficient market. That's baloney. It's not true. But it doesn't change the investing advice. And Justin is wrong. You know, I think he just hasn't analyzed it well enough. So what Rob Bennett is trying to bring to the table is to say, no. It does change the investing advice. It changes it in a very, very fundamental way. So I want to explain. What was the mistake? And I've talked about it before, but I'm just trying to present it in a way that it'll click with more people. The history of investing. You know, I have a podcast called The History of Investing. According to old Farmer Hocus, the history is there was a dramatic change in investing. And it was brought about by all the people who today push buy and hold, passive investing. The academic work began as the efficient market theory really goes back. I mean, I had a link at the Today's Passion feature the other day. It was a nice little thing where some academic, he traced the history of this back to like 1850. You know, I mean, it wasn't a formal theory, but people would just say things in books that were sort of akin to the efficient market concept. But it became formalized in the academic literature in the 1950s, 1960s. Eugene Fama is the name associated with it, but there were other people that were involved. People have won Nobel Prizes, is my understanding. Connection with this. And this is what's been discredited. And we're sort of all holding our collective breath saying, you know, are we going to acknowledge that? We've acknowledged it in these links. We've said the words since the crash. Before the crash, people were afraid to say the words. Since the crash, people are saying the words. I mean, I have 20 links there. I could have made it 40 if I wanted to push it. So people are saying it. But what they're not doing is translating what we've known for 30 years and what we're saying for 1 year into practical investing advice. They're admitting that the efficient market is a myth, but they're not saying how that changes how you invest. And the reason they give, and Justin Fox addresses this in the book. I haven't read it, but I've read several reviews. And what he does is he says, well, The old model's wrong, but there's no new model to take its place. So we're sort of stuck. With the practical advice, we're just going to have to continue, even though we no longer have an intellectual framework for it. We'll just stick with our old advice. Now, a driving consideration here, I think people overlook this, is in a lot of fields of study, you don't have to make a decision. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example. I don't know. I guess I'm thinking, when I think of scientific developments, say you're talking about planes. Say you're talking about airplanes. You know, people said the Wright brothers, you know, the plane wasn't going to work. Well, some people said it would work. Some people say it wouldn't work. Well, the way you proceed is you just sort of try things, and sooner or later, you know, either it works or it doesn't, and one side is proven right, one side's proven wrong, and then you go forward. Investing's not quite like that, because The trouble with investing is, if you don't have a theory for, if your theory for how to make a plane fly doesn't work, you don't have planes. You know, you just get there by train. That's your only option. There are no planes unless the theory works. But that's not true with investing. With investing, whether we have a theory that works or not, we've got to invest our money. In other words, there is no, there is no neutral ground. You've got to choose. So it's very disconcerting to people when Rob Bennett comes along and says, buy and hold doesn't work. And that's what I say. They've got, first of all, they've been doing it for 30 years. And secondly, they've got to invest their money. So I'm sort of presenting them with the choice of continue to do what you're doing, but understand that they're, I'm going to present the case for why everything you're doing is wrong. And of course, the case is very strong. So it makes them feel very anxious. I present historical data, and the historical data is just a mountain of evidence that this could never work. So it's very disturbing emotionally. On the other hand, if they were to say they were to permit Rob Bennett to post, say we were to allow honest posting on the internet on investing, if they do that, then they're going to hear these disturbing messages. Well, what are they going to do? The only thing you can do to make it not be disturbing anymore is to switch. Switch to valuation-informed indexing, or switch to the rational investing model. In other words, there is no neutral ground. It's not like you can say, well, okay, Rob, you have an interesting theory. We'll let you describe your theory. And, if over time we're convinced, we'll do that. If you allow it, it's going to undermine confidence in what you're doing today. I think that's good. I want to see a transition from the failed model to the model of the future. Passive investing is the failed model, the model of the past. Rational investing is the model of the future. I want to see people lose confidence in passive investing, because until they do, they're not going to become rational investors. So I'm all for it. But the people who are passive investors, they haven't studied this to the extent I have. They don't know all the things, I know. And they have a lot of questions. And they're saying, well, even to allow questioning makes their tummies hurt. So we're in a fix. The question, I guess what I'm trying to say is, the question here is, how do we manage the transition? How do we get from where we are to where we all want to be? Nobody wants to invest ineffectively. Nobody wants more stock crashes. No one wants their retirements to fail. But how do we get from where we are, where we know that the model doesn't work, buy and hold doesn't work, but we're not yet convinced that Rob Bennett's ideas work? And how do we get there? And I think the way we get there is by asking questions. This is why I've said we need a national debate on these questions, so that everybody can ask all the questions they have, and all the weaknesses in Rob Bennett's ideas can be publicly exposed, and all the strengths can be publicly exposed, and then people can decide for themselves. And I don't really want it to be Rob Bennett's model. In other words, I'm just some guy. I'd like it to be a model embraced by all kinds of people. John Bogle and Bill Bernstein and all these people. I'd like them all embracing it, working together to spread the word. Warren Buffett, anybody. But we can't do that until we say the old model's wrong. So one thing, we've got to deal with this political issue of, the pain that people feel because their model has been discredited, the embarrassment and the shame and all this sort of thing. We need to deal with this as a society. But one of the steps that you're going to get hung up on is people, where the people are today, where a lot of people are today, is they can't deny anymore that the evidence is, shows that buy and hold doesn't work. That's sort of become undeniable. But the cop-out, people are always looking for a cop-out because the pain of doing that is so great that they're saying there's got to be a way out. There's got to be a way we can avoid switching. Got to be. And they've sort of run out of, diversions. And now what they're saying is, well, all right, maybe there's not an efficient market, but there's no better way to invest. So we're just going to keep doing it. We're going to give up theory. We understand we don't have any theoretical support for buy and hold, but we're going to keep doing it anyway because we just have a feeling it's good. So what you've done is you violated the whole The starting principle was to be scientific. That was what Bogle brought to the table, and you're just throwing that off a cliff. I mean, you know, I hate that answer. But that's where people are today. That's where a lot of people are today. So that's where, you know, I think that's where Carl Richards is. He's saying, yeah, Carl Richards criticizes the defenders of the old model. He does that, and he does a good job of it. But the way he puts it to me is he says, I do it. I want to invite dialogue, but I don't want to start fights. He says, you want to start fights, Rob. I don't want to start fights. I want dialogue too. But in order for the dialogue to go somewhere productive, I feel I have to post honestly. I have to say this stuff can't work. If I pretend that I think it can work, people are just going to cling to it. I know that. I don't want them to cling to it. I want them to invest effectively. I want to help people. That's my goal. And it's Carl's goal too, but he can't be upfront about that goal. So my hope is that if we come to a better understanding of the mistake, how this happened, then it will click in some people's heads. Hey, yeah, you know, we got it exactly wrong. And if you get it exactly wrong, you can't say I'm going to stick with the same practical advice. You've got to change it. So what was the mistake? One thing you have to understand how this mistake was made, is that in the old days, it was, I don't know that any of this was done. See, it wasn't done scientifically. It was just sort of people giving different opinions. But investing, stock investing, was pretty much about market timing. Different people engaged in it to different extents, obviously. But the general idea was buy low, sell high. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an historian, but I think pretty much everybody was a market timer. They didn't jump in and out, but not all market timers do that. But everybody essentially wanted to buy low, sell high. That was what people were aiming for. The buy and hold model is an academic construct. It was based on academic literature. And the academic literature it was based on was studies showing that timing doesn't work. And I think this was, it's counterintuitive. You would think timing would work. You know, timing means paying attention to price. Timing means you own more stocks when they're well priced than you do when they're poorly priced. So you would think that would work. It works with everything else. You know, if you look at price when you're buying a stereo, it works. If you look at price when you're, you know, buying pork chops, it works. Why wouldn't it work with stocks? Why wouldn't price affect whether it's a good thing to buy stocks or not? But this evidence showed no. Price, you can't use price. You can't predict. You would think that when stocks were overpriced, they would do poorly. And when they were underpriced, they would do well. But the evidence said no. So they had to come up with an explanation. The mistake was looking only at short-term timing. This is the thing that caused all of this ruin and all this anger. The mistake was the studies they did not look at long-term timing. They looked at short-term timing. They looked at by employing intelligence, can you predict where the market's going to be a year from now? And the answer is you cannot. And once they showed that, the next step was, that's a finding. You see, that's based on evidence. That part they got, based on something solid. The next part, the buy and hold part, that was based on a theory, which is not evidence. It's not a finding. It's a guess. It's an explanation of the evidence. It was a reasonable explanation. It wasn't a crazy explanation, but it turned out to be wrong. There are two possible explanations of why timing wouldn't work. You would think timing would work. Timing is just paying attention to price. So it should work, but yet it didn't. Now, there are two possibilities. One possibility, you know, why can't a really intelligent person look at stock investing and say, okay, you know, the S&P is such and such a level today. 1 year from now, it's going to be where? And he's super smart, and he's going to tell you. He's going to predict. There are two explanations for why that wouldn't work. One is, if the market is perfectly rational, perfectly efficient, then The smartest human being on planet Earth cannot do any better than the market at predicting where the price is going to be a year from now. There's no way to gain an edge with intelligence, so give it up. That's the explanation they went with. There's a second explanation, which is every bit as good an explanation. And it, in fact, is supported by the historical data, which the first one isn't. So I believe the second one. The second explanation is not that the market is perfectly rational, and therefore you can't beat it. The second explanation is the market is totally nuts in the short term. Totally emotional. So it's like trying to time the market in the short term is like trying to predict the actions of a crazy man. You can't predict the actions of a crazy man. You'd do anything. You don't know what he's going to do. He could dress up as a clown. He could stand on his head. He could go tumbling down the stairs. You don't know what he's going to do. How can you predict? He's crazy. That's the real explanation. That's why the smartest person in the world, Warren Buffett, can't tell you where stocks are going to be 12 months from now. Because the market is us, and we are emotional, and can't say. It doesn't matter how smart you are, you can't figure us out, because we're just nuts. Okay? That's what the rational model says. So what this means is, this is the mistake. The mistake was in the explanation for why short-term timing doesn't work. Now, we have to move to the practical implementation. What does this mean in terms of how you invest? Well, if you believe the first explanation for why short-term timing doesn't work, you're going to tell people to buy and hold. You're going to say, look, the market is totally rational, totally efficient. Therefore, the only thing you can do is just go with the market. Put all your faith in the market. Tune out the noise. That's what Bogle says. Tune out the noise and just go with the market. You decide how much you should have in the market and then just stick with it through thick and thin and don't let anything cause you to waver. That's buy and hold. But if the second explanation is the reason why short-term timing doesn't work, if the market is just nutso, if it's not rational, it's the opposite, it's just totally emotional, well, that means that it's true. You can't predict what's going to happen a year from now. That follows. So ruling out short-term timing was great advice. That makes all the sense in the world. But can the market stay crazy forever? The answer is no. The answer is no. If the market could stay crazy forever, we could send stock prices to 10 times fair value. We have all the incentive in the world to do that. If we send stock prices to 10 times fair value, we could all retire at age 30. So naturally, we would do that. There's got to be, logic tells us, human reason tells us, there has to be some limit on how high we can send prices. And of course, there is. There is a limit. But the limit isn't, it's not a number. You can't say, well, the limit is 2 times fair value or the limit is 3 times fair value. There is no, what there is the market, the price in the short term is set by humans. It's set by emotion. So it's unpredictable, it's crazy. But in the long term, it's set by market realities. In the long term, it's the economic realities that dominate. So what's going on is the short term price is meaningless. The short term time is just, price is just gibberish. But the long term price is efficient, rational, reflective of the economic realities. The market is always striving toward efficiency, but it's never there in the short term. It's not immediately efficient, it's gradually efficient. See, that's the error. The error was thinking that the market was immediately efficient. The reality is the market is gradually efficient. And the way it works is, the way to discover the mistake is to ask about the mechanism. Ask, how does the market do this? How does the market get from how does the market adjust for the craziness and get to reality? How does the market do that? The theory, the buy and hold theory, is that they call it, what do they call it? I can't think of the word. You know, these things, it's on the tip of my tongue, but it's gone from my head. But arbitrage. Arbitrage is if some fund manager recognizes that there's a difference between the price of Campbell Soup and Kraft, you know, an unjustified difference, he can sort of, I mean, it's complicated. These transactions are complicated, but they know how to do them. They can set it up so that they're going to win. They know that the unjustified differential is going to be removed by the market, because the market must reflect the economic realities. And they can make money by setting it up so that it doesn't matter whether Kraft and Campbell Soup go up or down. They'll make money either way. But the differential has to disappear. And they know that that's going to happen. So they're confident. And because they make money on these bets, they, of course, have an incentive to set up these arbitrages. And so the theory here is the arbitrages are going to make the market price correct. And the theory, as Fama puts it forward, is this all happens within 24 hours. It happens instantly. The reality is two things. One, arbitrage doesn't work for the general market price. It works. It may well work between Kraft and Campbell Soup. That might be. I don't say there can't be efficiency in that regard, but that has nothing to do with the general market price. It could be that the market works out any flaws in the pricing between Campbell and Kraft, but that both of them are valued at three times fair value when you're at bubble prices. In other words, there is no arbitrage mechanism by which anyone can profit by knowing that the stocks are going to crash sometime within the next 10 years. And that's the best you can do. We know that these things work themselves out, but they sometimes don't work themselves out for 10 years. There is no arbitrage that you can do. If there were a way to do it, I'd be a rich man today, but there is no way to do it. So there is no mechanism. There is no mechanism by which the price can become efficient. The overall price. It may be that individual companies have to be relatively priced properly relative to each other. That may or may not be true. There's the theory would at least make sense in that regard. But there is no mechanism that I've ever heard of by which the overall market price could be set properly by the market. So that's, you know, part of the problem with their explanation is that there is no arbitrage mechanism for the overall price. And second, there is no mechanism by which it can happen instantly, but there is a mechanism by which it happens gradually. And that is that when things are valued, when all companies are valued insanely high, the market does take care of it. I think that the way I described it in an earlier podcast is if people want the assets within a company and the stock price is insanely low, they're going to, instead of accumulating the assets on their own and buying the assets, you know, on their own, they're going to buy the stock and acquire the assets that way, and that's going to pull the stock price up. And if all stocks are priced insanely high, they're going to do the opposite. They're not going to buy the stock. They're going to go out and set up businesses. They're going to acquire the assets and compete with that business so that the overvaluation will come to benefit them. So there is a market mechanism that brings prices back to reality, but it's not a mechanism that takes place in 24 hours. It's a mechanism that in some cases could take place in 24 hours. In other cases, it could take a year. In other cases, 5 years. In other cases, 10 years. So what we have is the market is always in the process of becoming efficient. It's always working its way there. But there's no reason to believe that it would be efficient instantly. Now, if we're at fair value, you could say, okay, it's efficient. Just happens to be by coincidence. But there's no reason to believe that just because somebody says, oh, the price of the, you know, the S&P is such and such, that that's really the value of the assets of the S&P. There's no reason to think that. Prices are set by emotion in the short term. Only in the long term can you say that. Now, the strategic implication here is huge. You see, this is the whole enchilada here. If the theory that the academics came up with was right, buy and hold would indeed follow. I say this over and over again. These people are not stupid. The logic chain is strong. The mistake was the premise. But if the premise had been correct, everything they say would be right. Buy and hold would make perfect sense. But if the premise is wrong, it's not a little wrong. It's a disaster. Now just think about it. The ultimate case, the dramatic case, is January of 2000. If the market were efficient, if the buy and hold people were right, what you should have done in deciding how much what your stock allocation would be in January 2000 was, you should look at the average return on stocks, which is 6.5 real. Check whether that beats the alternative asset classes. Well, TIPS were paying 4% real. 6.5 is better. Therefore, you should have been in a heavily in stocks, 70, 80% stocks. It's better. But if there's such a thing as overvaluation, which there cannot be in an efficient market, if overvaluation is real and stocks are priced at 3x fair value, well, then the long-term return on stocks, the most likely 10-year return on stocks, is a negative 1% real. So if you put your money in stocks at a negative 1% real, and thereby give up the asset class that paid 4% real, you're losing 5 percentage points of return every year for 10 years running. Do the math, and that comes to a loss of 50% of your money. So if you start it with $100,000, you're losing $50,000. If you start it with $500,000, you're losing $250,000. If you're starting with $1 million, if you're close to retirement, and you're starting with $1 million, and you buy into this buy and hold gibberish, you're losing $500,000. That's the price of believing in this wrong theory. See, I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding how big a deal getting the theory right is. If you're going to put forward a theory, you better get it right. Because if you get it wrong, it's not going to be a small mistake. It's going to throw everything off. And this is the economic crisis we're living through today. They got it wrong. I see no crime in getting it wrong. Anyone can get something wrong. You don't want to punish people for getting something wrong. You want to encourage it because, you know, if you don't make mistakes, you're not learning anything. You're not trying. But when you discover you've gotten it wrong, then you have to change the theory. And that's where we're stuck. What happened was, you know, the academics came up with this stuff, and it's sort of harmless. When academics get something wrong, it just means people in school, you know, hear the wrong story. But Bogle took these academic ideas and made it practical. He told people to invest according to these ideas. So now people are losing their retirements. And once you get the stock selling industry pushing this stuff, they don't want to admit they're wrong. They don't want to stand up on a stage and say, oh, by the way, you know all that stuff I've been telling you for 30 years? You've been losing all your money? Got it wrong. Just realized today, got it all wrong. They don't want to say that. So that's why we've had this, you know, bizarre experience of honest posting being banned throughout the internet. And, you know, this is what's different about Rob Bennett from all these others. The others are sort of, you know, they're saying, yeah, you know, efficient market theory is gibberish and, you know, buy and hold doesn't work and the experts don't know what they're talking about and all that's good. But where are we going to go with that? Are we just going to sort of say, oh, well, yeah, they got it wrong, but, you know, well, maybe we'll put a website up and we'll talk about, you know, how to do it right, but we're not going to try to get anybody to hear it. You know, we're just going to have it just be just among us, you know, just a few of us. Rob Bennett's saying no. Rob Bennett's saying we've all got a stake in the U.S. economic system. We've all got a stake in the U.S. political system. We need to spread knowledge of what we have learned with everyone. And one of the reasons for spreading it, frankly, is that we might have gotten some things wrong. You know, Rob Bennett's not God. The hundreds of people who have helped are not God. By exposing these ideas to a broader, you know, a broader audience, we're going to find out the weaknesses and the strengths. That's how you do it. But to do that, we have to have, you can't get there without saying that the buy and hold model has failed. You know, we're not saying that to hurt anybody's feelings. We're saying it because you can't move to the next step without saying that the old thing is wrong. That's where we stand today. We know it's wrong. Mountain of evidence that it's wrong. Some people are saying it's wrong, but the people who are following it are ignoring them. They don't want to, you know, there really is an emotional thing here. There really is cognitive dissonance. And a lot of the people who are following the wrong strategy, they don't want to admit it, so they just keep going. They just keep going. And that means there's going to be another crash if they keep going. We're all going to get hurt again. We've got to, at a bare minimum, we've got to open the internet to honest posting so that people can hear the other side. And that, you know, when I say open the internet, I don't mean open some tiny site. I mean open everything. Open Vanguard. I mean open Morningstar. Open Index Universe. Open Bogleheads. Open Early Retirement Forum. Everything. It should all be open. People should be allowed to post their honest views. Passives should surely post their views. But rationals should post their views. And then people should decide. You know, but the rationals are going to have a strong case. There's nothing we can do about that. It's not our fault. You know, it just happens to be that that's what the historical data supports. So the passives are going to feel funny. And I think the best thing for them to do would be to back off on the arrogance scale and just sort of say, hey, you know, maybe we're not so perfect. If Rob Arnott is saying, you know, our approach is based on myth and urban legend, maybe we ought to be, just a little less arrogant, a little less sure of ourselves. And if we do that, we're going to have the greatest learning experience in the history of investing, because all these insights have been bottled up for 30 years. You know, I didn't come up with these insights because I'm a genius. I came up with these insights because people have been developing these insights for 30 years and haven't been able to talk about them, haven't been able to spread the word. And they're all just sitting there. But the key is, you know, being mean enough to say, you know, John Bogle's a great man who did wonderful things, but yeah, he did make a big mistake. If you can't say that, you can't get to a good place. So I hope that explains a little bit about how this happened. You know, it's not a conspiracy. It's not a bunch of evil people got together in a room and decided to screw us over. It's a mistake. It was a genuine mistake. The trouble is not so much the mistake. That's just something that happens. The trouble is the unwillingness to admit the mistake. And there's no way to make that easy. There's nothing I can do to make that easy. You know, tell somebody, not only have you made a mistake, the greatest mistake ever made in the history of personal finance, but you've covered it up for 30 years. And you've caused untold human misery. But it's not going to get better if we don't do that. So we sort of have to all hold hands together and work up the courage to be loving to those who made the mistake, to congratulate them, to express our gratitude for them for the good things they've done, but at the same time, to be firm in saying no, no, no. The days in which, you know, we're going to sit quietly, you know, while you put forward this gibberish, no. That's coming to an end. We've seen too much human misery. Those who understand the realities have every bit as much of a right to post as those who do not understand the realities, not because they're dumb, but because they willfully don't want to learn the realities, because the realities make them feel sick to their stomach when they think about the great financial damage they've caused by promoting a mistake. Buy and hold is a mistake. The greatest mistake ever made in the history of personal finance. Good luck with your investing strategy.